You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Those highlights, or maybe not so much highlights, brought to you by Fox Sports, of course. Welcome back to the Packaday Radio Show. A reminder that the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis is coming up next from 9 to 11. Jake Ryan, former Packers linebacker, will be joining at 10 a.m. Going to be great to catch up with him, so make sure you're checking out the Mason Crosby Show today. Also, coming up on March 1st is an event you will surely want to attend. Mason and his wife, Molly Crosby, who is a cancer survivor, will be awarded the prestigious Award of Excellence from the Vince Lombardi Cancer Foundation. If you'd like to be a part of it, it's a black tie event. Simply go to LombardiFoundation.org and check out that opportunity today. Make sure to do so. A very awesome event, and I highly recommend it. We are joined right now, though, by the one and only Dusty Evely, AcmePackingCompany.com, Packaday Podcast, at Dusty Evely on Blue Sky. Dusty, it is great to be hearing from you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Good to talk to you. Excited to talk a little ball, dude.
Yeah, likewise. It is always great to talk ball with you. I want to start fairly simple. Takeaways from the Super Bowl. We've been kind of talking today of just how it's maybe changed the calculus and the thinking of what maybe Green Bay goes after this offseason. I don't know if it's changed it for you. Obviously, Philly was dominant up front on both sides of the ball. Just, I think, kind of reminds everyone, oh yeah, probably should just build through those trenches. But what were just your kind of key takeaways from the Super Bowl, the Eagles run, how the Packers should build it? I'll let you go in any direction that you want.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it didn't change it too much. I mean, the front four was dominant. I think I saw a stat The largest stat I saw in terms of blitzes was 2. I've seen some stats that show 0 blitzes from the Eagles in Super Bowl. That means either winning with front four or winning with, you know, kind of getting into four-man rushes from different ways. I obviously saw like a Bond blitz, quote-unquote blitz. That was only a four-man rush. But really the biggest thing, that's been the biggest thing, I mean, looking at the Packers all season, is you need a pass rush. They've been trying to get there with Gary. Thought Gary was going to, you know, recover, be back to 100% this year. He never really quite took off. I hope Van Ness was going to take a step. Devontae Wyatt, you hope, was going to take a step. Kenny Clark, you hope, was going to be Kenny Clark. So you have what you thought was the pieces there up front, and clearly was not. And so from that perspective, I mean, it didn't really change, because that was like from the first game when they could not get any pressure against the Eagles in week one. Yeah. Like, all right, dude, something needs to happen here. And Halfley did everything he could, but you can only manufacture stuff for so long. At a certain point, you're going to have a point in the season, you got to win with 4. You got to be able to win consistently with 4 and threaten them. And the Packers haven't been able to do that. So, I mean, that's the biggest one. And part of that, honestly, also goes to, like, draft strategy, which I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan. The Packers have not only the thresholds, but they also have kind of what they look for in a guy. And I'm fine with them with their evaluation process, the guys they bring in. Obviously, when out there as part of the interview process, that stuff's hard to speak to. But you see a guy like, he didn't really take over the Super Bowl, but see a guy in the run that he had in Jalen Carter, who clearly had some red flags. And the Eagles took a swing on him, getting him later because of, you know, the legal issues, some of the issues he had coming out of Georgia, the question marks on him, and to see what he did down the stretch. I think, you know, it's depending on how that interview stuff goes, which again, we're not in there. I think it also says, like, listen, if a guy is super, super talented, you hate to say it, but if he's got a couple of red flags, maybe you trust that, maybe you trust your process, maybe you trust your coaching, your infrastructure there to get the most out of him and maybe level that stuff out after he gets out of college. So maybe that it's okay to take a swing at an uber talented guy who might be falling a little bit.
It's a really interesting conversation. I've been kind of talking about that funnel quite a bit. Is there something that needs to change just with Green Bay in general? And obviously, you're bringing up maybe taking a couple more chances because you have the locker room that you do, which I think is a really smart way to look at it. I also appreciate the funnel that they're putting everything through from a, you know, height, weight, speed, athleticism. If you look at all the all pros, the Hall of Famers, the even the Pro Bowlers, like the best players in the league, they're almost every single time a pretty freak athlete. And there's certainly nobody, almost nobody that's not at least a great athlete that is on that list. So I think it's smart to kind of put it through that filter and then, you know, sort of try to weed out some of the injury issues, weed out some of the character flaws, and then evaluate from there. But you get to the results of that process, and you look at the first round picks of the LVNs, the Devontae Wyatts, the Quay Walkers, the Eric Stokes, etc. We all know the names, and you're not getting the ROI that you're hoping for. Is it just we need to scout better, or is there something that they need to change in totality with their process to get those better results in the first round?
I mean, it's an interesting question, because obviously, you know, some of those guys are different, you know, different positions, different players. I think, I mean, one of the more recent ones, you think of like LVN, and kind of, you know, who was on the board at that time, and even looking at him, I know people like to talk about he wasn't a starter at Iowa. That doesn't matter. Like, he was basically a starter at Iowa. They just, yep. they do their stuff differently there. He was playing the majority of snaps. He was a starter without being a starter. So that doesn't factor into it. What does factor into it is he is this big pocket crushing. Like you said, there's no, I think it leads to them having, on some of that stuff, you know, edge rusher specifically, they don't get a whole lot of variety in some of that stuff. If you're looking at, I don't think that's everything they're looking at, but if you're looking at, we want a freak athlete, which if you're a tall dude who's a freak athlete like Van Ness, that is going to be high on their board. But if you look at what he does on the field, what he can do on the field, what his pass rush plan is, he was always a guy that was, he was going to take a little bit just because he didn't really have any counter moves, or 2 years in, he didn't have one. And so it is still one of those, like, I think they need, I don't know if they need to, like, question everything about their process, because all in all, I think the process is good. But I think there are times where, like, I'm not saying I'm sitting on my couch and you can see things better than GMs. You don't have access to all that information there. But there are times you look at a pick and go, listen, man, maybe this plays off in 3 years, maybe, if everything goes right. But it certainly seems like there's more immediate impact there if you just go outside your thresholds a little bit. And clearly they do that sometimes. They did that with Jair. But the fact that you can name that with like a handful of guys shows they don't do that very often. So, I mean, I think something needs to wholesale, needs to change. I think they need to be willing to be a little more flexible, a little more often in the type of guys that they look at to bring in, I think.
I think that's really well said, and we'll be interested to see if they make any changes to try to get those better results, specifically in the first round. Day two, day three, pretty darn good. Day one just hasn't had that impact player that you would really like to see when you're picking up in the, especially when you're picking early in the first round. This is the Packaday Radio Show. We're being joined by the one and only Dusty Evely of Acme Packing Company, Packaday Podcast. You can find him at Dusty Evely on Blue Sky. What are your keys to this Packers offseason? Obviously, pass rush is one of them. We've talked about it. And do you have any sort of early free agent crushes that you're looking at as we start getting into this big free agency period coming up?
Pass rush is a big one. They need corner, which we knew last year. They obviously didn't really do a whole lot there. They addressed safety, which is cool. I do think they need a vet wide receiver. Devontae's being bandied about because it's the easy one. I don't particularly care who, but I do think they need a vet wide receiver in that room. And offensive line, both top-end talent and depth. It gets a little scary if you show a depth chart. So, yeah. I mean, with that in mind, I mean, I don't think they're going to spend big on edge in terms of, like, some of those guys just kind of looking down, okay, who are some guys they can get maybe, like, a year too early, a guy coming off an injury, a guy like Dennis Gardeck, who played for the Cardinals. Really nice pressure rate. He tore his ACL in October, so if he's going to be up to 100% when the season starts, who knows, but a guy like him, Chase Young is up there. Malcolm Kuntz, who injured his knee before the season with the Raiders, are guys that, like, I don't know if they completely fit. Some of those guys are just straight pass rushers. They don't do a whole lot with the run. But gives them kind of something a little different in terms of what they have that I don't think is going to break the bank. And then, the guys on everyone's supposed to be like DJ Reed, Travarius Ward. If you can land one of those guys as a cornerback, 100% down for that. And Chris Godwin, I know he's had some injury issues. But what he does at wide receiver, I think could fit really well with this room. So that's a handful of my guys that I'm kind of looking at.
You're more okay coming with guys coming off of injuries, clearly. Gardeck, Chris Godwin, yeah. And who is the other one you said? Kuntz.
Kuntz, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, it's
apparently I am, and I don't know how that I should be given the Packers' recent injury stuff.
What could go wrong? No, it's so. This is why I love bringing you on, Dusty Evely. There's not a single person I would have brought on that would have mentioned Dennis Gardeck, and I absolutely love that. This is so funny. When I watched Packers Cardinals tape last when they were set to face the Cardinals, obviously, and then after the game, Dennis Gardeck was one of the first guys that stood out to me when I was watching tape of the Cardinals pregame, and I had no idea who he was. And he's like 30 years old now. He's going to be 31 in August, yeah. And he had never been somebody that had popped on my radar. I don't remember him coming out of college from Sioux Falls. I think he was an undrafted guy, but I watched him and I'm like, this guy is really good. I was massively impressed. I know the Cardinals had a terrible pass rush, so being the Cardinals' best pass rusher is like, it's not that much of a compliment, but he was clearly it. And then of course he tears his ACL in week 7, and that certainly changed. I feel awful for the guy because I think he actually would have got a pretty solid contract, and that probably changes things now. But if they could get him on a flyer deal and maybe he's not back till like week 6 or something, I was very, very impressed with what he brought to the table. Kind of like a poor man's Andrew Van Ginkle, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy comparison because of the hair, but you do kind of see he kind of plays with his hair on fire. Seems like a smart dude, just absolutely crashes the line every single time. I that's a guy I don't think I paid attention to. That's Ollie Connolly talked about Dennis Gardeck, and I started watching him, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, this dude's good. So that'd be
right. Yeah, he's really fine. I feel bad for the dude that he tore his ACL, especially this is probably his one chance at a big payday. But yeah, obviously medical is going to come down to that. Same thing with Kuntz and Godwin, etc. But yeah, they all make sense, especially because you're probably getting them a little bit cheaper than you would because of the injuries. So those are, again, talking about maybe vetting out some of those red flags, taking a couple chances. That might be what Green Bay needs to do, and sort of following a little bit of that Philly philosophy at times of maybe taking a couple home run swings and just kind of hoping that they pay off. Again, we're being joined by Dusty Evely, Acme Packing Company, Packaday Podcast. You can find him on Blue Sky at Dusty Evely. This is the big reason, Dusty, that I wanted to bring you on, because I know that I don't think there's anyone that can talk about this as educatedly as you can. The offense sputtered out at the end of last year, and it just did not have the same feeling as it did as they were going through those 30-point streaks, or 30-point games. I think it was a 5-game streak that they had over 30 points. Even when they were, I guess, sort of quote unquote clicking on offense, it didn't quite feel like they were always in rhythm. Jordan Love didn't have the season that we all wanted him to, I believe, and I think hopefully a lot of that was just due to injury. As you sort of watched the season progress, as you saw it go along, as you saw it almost regress, especially in those last few games of the season, what did you see? What went wrong? And what needs to change to get them back clicking on all cylinders?
I think the Love injury, I think, hampered them more than just Love. I mean, they obviously, when Willis came in, that week two, week three, which were just thrilling games, so much fun, they obviously weren't really run heavy. They unlocked something with their run game with all that spinner, a lot of that kind of single wing stuff out of gun with the split gun backfield, and all the stuff they were doing there was so much fun and so awesome. And I think they leaned a little too heavy into that, even with Love being back. Obviously, we had a couple weeks there where like Love couldn't move when he came back, and so they leaned away from that a little bit. But I think they wanted that to be a big part of their offense. They felt like they really stumbled onto something, which they did. I mean, that was it gave them a chance to like do some things with Jaden Reed in the backfield, use a bunch of misdirection. It was very, very fun. But I think part of what it did, I think it led them to being a little more run heavy than I think they want to be, just down to down, because they knew they had unlocked this and they could be good. And it seemed like it hampered the passing game a bit. Kind of some early rhythm stuff. I mean, maybe that might be a little overblown, because it did feel like at times they had like, I mean, we're going to run. And then once we get done running, it's going to be like, we got second and seven, we got a third and eight, and we got to run four verts down the field. All the quick game stuff wasn't coming until later. Didn't give Love a chance to settle in. But even beyond that, even some of that, I've not looked at this yet, because they change what they do sometimes in terms of like game script. But in terms of game script, when you're looking at like, you know, those first 15 or whatever, which not every team does, but I know the Packers do that occasionally, even if they scrap it sometimes. If you don't get a lot of passes in there, you're not getting a lot of tells for down the road either. And so by leaning so heavy in the run game, if you get down, it's harder to come back from because you're shortening the game. So that's part of it. But then also you're not really getting yourself familiar with the looks that the defense is going to give you against certain pass sets in that game. They're trying to gather that information early. So I think that was part of it. I do think some of the other parts of it early on, again, they had that spinner stuff. They were also doing a whole bunch of like pin pull by attacking the angle, where they have like, you know, wide receiver blocking down a linebacker from the edge, pulling. They usually do it right side, so pulling Zach Tom around, pulling, and then you get Tucker Kraft rolling on the edge too, and then you pitch the ball out, so you got this like, you know, this wide pitch to the outside attacking the edge. They did a lot of that stuff early when they're kind of unlocking their run game stuff. They didn't do a lot of that late. With all the bells and whistles stuff, a lot of that run game ended up coming down to, we're pounding this up the middle, and I think they got into trouble with that against a team like the Eagles, who kind of knew, all right, man, listen, they're gonna do a lot of misdirect stuff at us. They're going to put guys in motion. Love's going to be spinning. You're going to have – and they got a lot of really cool variations off of that. But ultimately, they're going to run between the tackles. And I think that changes how you play defense. So I think that's a long, long, long way of talking here. But I do think that's the two main things is, I don't think the pass game got rolling early. And I think that ended up hurting them down the stretch when they kind of need to unlock that a little bit more. And I do think with the run game, as cool as it was, as cool as it looked, I think they lost some of the variety in the way they wanted to attack as the year went on. And I'm not sure the reason for that, because it was working really well for them early.
I love that you brought that up. And what I want to ask you, and when you say variety, what I felt, and you can easily just tell me I'm an idiot, I felt like it didn't have the same connectivity on offense, where one thing early would build to something later like that. It's not necessarily the illusion of complexity, but it's sequencing. It's like, you know, a play one way, a stretch play one way leads to a bootleg later. That's obviously the simplest way of looking at it, but it just didn't feel like some of the spinner series and some of their run game had quite that connectivity where it was actually setting stuff up later in the game. Now there would be times they would certainly play off of it a little bit, but it just didn't feel like the offense was quite as connected as it had been in the past. It felt like they had a series of cool plays that they could run, but it didn't necessarily build on itself. And again, feel free to tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe if anyone would have saw it differently and seen it a little bit more in detail, it definitely would have been you. But that's how I felt at times, is it just didn't have that sequencing that it maybe had in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. I do think when you get into that world, if you're living in like that split gun, it wasn't, I want to say Pony, which would be like the two running backs, but it wasn't really Pony, because a lot of times they had Jaden Reed. A lot of times it was, because they had Chris Brooks, who was essentially like the de facto fullback in this offense.
Right.
Anytime you live in that way, you're kind of limiting what you can do in terms of explosiveness, what you can build off of that, because you're living really close to the line of scrimmage. If you've got two backs, you've got your speed, like you're kind of limiting your speed. You're living more in the short horizontal world. You can open that up. You can stretch that up by going vertical at times. But if you've got Jaden Reed as your guy who's running horizontal, well, that's like a kind of a vertical stretcher from the backfield you've got there. And so you're wasting him on something in the flat that you could use for something else. So I think we did see them build some stuff off of stuff. It was fairly connected. But I do think you're right in that. I mean, I think we saw them try to connect some of that stuff. I just think when you're living as heavily you are in that world, you, as cool as that is and as awesome that is as a package, I mean, I'm a huge fan of it. It does limit what you can do if you're living out of that 50% of the time. It's just your menu of plays kind of shrinks a bit.
Yeah, that's a better way of saying it. That's why we have you on, Dusty Evely, Acme Packing Company, Packaday Podcast. A couple really quick ones before we get you out of here. Jordan Love's 2024 season, obviously the injuries played a huge part. What kind of gives you reason for optimism that he's going to have a big bounce back year or could have a big bounce back year in 2025?
Man, so when he got drafted, I think I was talking to you about this. I talked to everyone about this one. I'm pretty sure I talked to you about this. One of his issues that I really had with him was like he didn't see the field well. At times, and part of that was the offense he was in, but he'd have these interceptions where he's looking, he kind of checked the backside safety, he'd come back to the right, and he'd never look back. He'd never kind of check where it was. In a handful of interceptions his senior year that were just like, he thought he looked off the linebacker, he never then looked back, and then he threw that, and he never saw the guy. That was one of my main issues with him coming out of college. I think for some of the issues that he had this year, that didn't really crop up. He had like one or two interceptions. Obviously, he had more interceptions than you want, but most of those were not as a result of like a bad read. I was going to say a bad decision. A lot of those were the result of a bad decision. So I think if you look at what he does, I think he sees the field well. I think he went through progressions well. I think that part of his game got better. The feet were still tied to the concept pretty well. At times, he got a little sloppier with that, and I think that's partly the injury. I don't think he ever fully came back, and I think his feet were ahead of his eyes sometimes, and then other times his eyes were ahead of his feet. So I think footwork, in terms of the drop back stuff, could be better. But I think he was seeing the field really, really well, which I think gives me cause for optimism. I think he could be better at knowing when a play is done, which has been the issue with him for a while. You don't want to take away that aggressiveness. There's times you're like, dude, you don't need to throw across your body. Like you can throw the ball away. We could live another down here. So I think that's like an easy fix he could do. But I do think based like his processing, I think it was better this year than it had been in the past. And I think that's encouraging.
Yeah, I think so too. Just has to get that rhythm down and hopefully be healthy in 2025. And hopefully Green Bay's offense is going to be off and rolling. Dusty, I know you are off and rolling. You're absolutely the best. What do you got coming up on Acme Packing Company this week? And where can we find all of your incredible work?
I've been trying to do a series where I look at the playoff games, Super Bowl now with the last game, and just see like, hey, what plays could the Packers steal? So I have not done that yet. So that might be coming up. I'm probably doing some draft stuff over there pretty soon. I got to look into that. And then you can find me over there at least once a week during the off season, and then with Steve Perich and Sarah Kelleher. Hi, Steve. Every Wednesday we're Pack a Day.
So that means you're not saying hi to Sarah, just hi to Steve.
Sarah's not listening right now. I think Steve might be.
That's fair. That's fair enough. Oh, that's amazing. Go follow him. He's the absolute best. You can follow him on social media, Blue Sky at Dusty Evely. Dusty, thank you so much. We'll do this again soon, my friend.
Appreciate you, Andy. Thanks, dude.
Likewise. When we come back, we're going to be going to those phones. So get those phone calls into the Nicolay Law Fan Talking text line, 414-677-1250. We're talking the Packers' biggest needs. Did it change based on what you saw in the Super Bowl? It's the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook.
The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.